Welcome to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Thanks for joining us. We've got a special guest from Chapel Hill, Andrew Park. We're celebrating with Andrew the appearance on the front page of the business section of the Sunday New York Times, his article with a headline, A Hot Selling Weapon and Inviting Target, deals with something that's really a hot issue in Chapel Hill. A lot of people interested in the gun violence and the regulation of guns, the danger of guns, and a lot of other people are interested in protecting their Second Amendment rights further out in the country here in Orange County. Andrew, welcome. Andrew Park is a professional journalist, but this is your first, is this your first front page story on the New York Times?
It is. And thank you for having me. It's really my pleasure. But well, yeah, it is. It was an exciting thing. Of course, the Times is such a great exposure for a writer. So yeah, I was very excited.
Well, I want to celebrate the big news that your article, a Chapel Hill resident's article, is on the front page of the business section of the New York Times. But I bet more people who are listening are interested in the story. And the story is about really a fascinating guy who's about my age named Jim Zumbo, whom you describe as a burly 66-year-old outdoor writer. Tell us the story, or tell us about this guy.
Yeah, well, you know, Jim Zumbo is would be familiar to a lot of outdoors enthusiasts, hunters and fishermen, fisherwomen. He has been a columnist at Outdoor Life magazine for 40 years. He has done tremendous amount of hunting and is considered one of the experts on big game hunting in North America. He is the absolute encyclopedia picture of what you would expect a hunting journalist to look like. You know, a big burly guy, gray hair, gray mustache, and if you ever see his website, he's got pictures of himself hunting, you know, bear and
with all the dead animals.
And, you know, he likes to hunt in the mountains. He lives near Cody, Wyoming, which is right near one of the entrances to Yellowstone National Park. He is, you know, he's exactly what you would expect, like I said.
Well, now, some of the big hunters, the recreational hunters, have a real close relationship with the National Rifle Association, which has not only a hunting agenda, but also an agenda about gun regulation. And some don't. Some just, they just hunt with their shotgun or mm-hmm. with their rifle, and they don't. What about, how did Jim Zumbo fit into that role?
Well, he had had a long history with the NRA. He had been a member for many years and had worked with the NRA on different programs promoting hunting. But at the same time, he was not, and he doesn't describe himself as a gun guy. He was not somebody who was particularly involved in the political or legal debates over the Second Amendment and over gun control. You know, in the context of this story, he was not somebody who really was particularly interested in firearms as anything more than just a tool for hunting. He saw guns as a tool for hunting. And the reason I was writing about him is because earlier this year, he ran into just a firestorm of controversy. And a lot of it was due to that fact that he was not really aware of what was going on among firearms enthusiasts, among gun guys, people who really pay attention to firearms product development and technology and what's on the market, and see a gun as much more than just a tool for hunting.
If I remember your story right, he was a part of that community, well respected in the community because he served the community primarily in the hunting and outdoors area, but he was a member of the club of folks who included Second Amendment rights people who believe that people ought to be able to have any kind of gun they want anytime and stuff like that. And he you describe it. I mean, this is what your story is about. What happened?
Yeah. Well, he was on a hunt. Really, just they were hunting coyotes in southeastern Wyoming. Himself and some other outdoors journalists were on a trip with some representatives of Remington Arms, testing out some, I believe, some new ammunition. They're in, they have a long day hunting, kind of a hard, rough day, and one of the topics of discussion during and after the hunt is the growing popularity of what this story is about, which is black rifles, which is a term that's used to describe modern military style, usually semi-automatic guns, and particularly rifles. And Jim Zumbo was, just to put it simply, he was very surprised to hear from his companions at how popular these were getting for use in hunting. He knew they existed, but he didn't think of them as sporting weapons. He was a traditionalist.
What is the black, just, we do think of hunting as with a shotgun or with a rifle.
Right.
Maybe not a lot of automatic or semi-automatic, or at least that's our idea about hunting.
That's right.
That you, on the other hand, those of us who've been in the military, we think about, well, in the old days, you know, the M1, which was, you could shoot them pretty fast, then replaced by, what was, I've forgotten, it was an AR-15 or something like that, and then it became the M16.
That's right.
And is the black rifle closer to the M16 than it is than what my idea of a hunting rifle would be?
That's absolutely right. In fact, the most popular of black rifles, the one that has really driven the huge popularity of black rifles, is the AR-15, which what became, when it was adopted by the military in the early 60s, became the M16.
What I remember about it, I mean, I ought not to, it's been 30 or 40 years since I was in the Army, but it was that new weapon was coming on, and as compared to the M1, which was the standard World War II weapon, fairly heavy, it was very serviceable and pretty accurate, but this M16 or AR-15, it was lightweight. It was much more rapid. I mean, and it was easy to shoot people. I mean, it was just, I don't know in terms of accuracy. I guess it was more accurate, but mainly it was something that you could get at quickly and worked well. I couldn't imagine it. I don't know what you'd hunt with it.
Well, it is gotten to be more popular for hunting small game, but you can even hunt large game with it with the right, if it's modified for the right kind of ammunition. But you're absolutely right. When it was not considered a sporting weapon when it was introduced, and it actually was controversial when it was introduced into the military because it got a reputation in Vietnam for being kind of finicky. There were lots of reports of it jamming up, got kind of a bad reputation. But as you say, it was lightweight. It was semi-automatic or fully automatic, which was obviously a big change. And it was also very modular. You could break it down, on the field of battle, and put it back together. An 18-year-old who was just, fresh into the military could do that. And that was another big, a big feature of it. As the years have progressed, the M16 has evolved. It has evolved into several other versions. It's still used, but it's evolved in several iterations since then. And in the meantime, the AR-15, has grown in popularity among civilians and gotten much more refined and appropriate for the kinds of things that a civilian would want to buy it for, such as hunting small game, varmint hunting, what they call pest control out in the country. If you have property and you're trying to keep the varmints away. It has become very popular for target shooting, and actually in the mid to late 90s was sanctioned as a sanctioned for competition in target shooting, which was made it automatically very popular.
Let me just interrupt you because it's ringing a bell with me.
Yeah.
And trying to bring in back memories. There are a lot of men mostly, but men and women who are in the armed services who use this weapon. And I remember when I came out, and we had came out of the service having primarily used the M1, you know, taking it apart so many times. It wasn't that I fell in love with it, but it was a part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think if somebody had offered me, if I'd had my choice of any weapon, it would have been that one that I was familiar with.
Right.
So there must have been, after Vietnam, there must have been thousands, hundreds of thousands of military veterans who came out, who learned to shoot, learn about guns with that weapon. That's the one they know. And so if somebody put one and said, you can use this for hunting, I guess they would say, yeah, this is the one I know.
You're absolutely right. And there's really a history, a tradition of that. In certainly in American history, you had veterans who came back from World War I and World War II who had gotten used to using the M1 or before that, you know, Springfield and Remington rifles, .30-06 rifles. When they came back and wanted a gun in their house, either for home protection or for hunting or for sport, that was what they thought of. They were comfortable with that. And in many cases, this is something that, you know, this was a gun that they had grown very attached to. The same thing, I think, happened in Vietnam, began to happen in Vietnam. It was, with respect to the M16 AR-15 gun, it was really solidified, I believe, in the Persian Gulf War, because the gun had really evolved quite a bit by that
time. It was a better weapon.
It was a better weapon at that point. And the upshot is you have 20, 30, 40-year-olds and up, today, who, when they think of, when they picture a rifle in their head, that's what they picture. They don't picture they don't picture an M1, first of all. They don't picture their grandparents, you know, Winchester, you know, Model 70 or Remington hunting rifle necessarily. They're as likely to picture, you know, an M16 because that's the one they're used to seeing and being around.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. I'm talking to Andrew Park, and we're talking about his recent article on the front page of the business section of the New York Times about what he calls the Black Rifle, and he's been telling us about the Black Rifle. When we get back, maybe he'll tell us more about the story of the guy who got in trouble when he complained about the Black Rifle. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. My guest is Andrew Park. Andrew is a journalist and whose recent article on the front page of the business section of the New York Sunday Times caught my attention. First of all, to celebrate that a friend of mine's such a great journalist that the New York Times has hired him to write front page articles. But the what we were talking about with you, Andrew, is the story. And the story is about a guy named Jim Zambo. And it had to do with a rifle that you called the, or that the community calls the Black Rifle, but I know it better, having been in the service, as the M16 mm-hmm. or the AR-15. And so you've told us how it got into civilian life. What is its role in civilian life for hunters and gun owners who are not owners, not hunters?
Well, it is because the AR-15 is now the classic Black Rifle, and the latest issue, May issue of Guns and Ammo magazine has a cover story. It calls the AR-15 America's rifle. And I think there are several things going on here, but it has become, just, you know, first to preface this, it has become the fastest growing segment of the firearms business. Firearms business is not particularly a fast growing business over the last, you know, 15, 20, 25 years. As hunting has plateaued or declined as a pastime in America, as gun control has emerged and gained strength, and as imported firearms have taken their, you know, taken some of the market share from American companies. You know, the gun business is not a particularly great one to be in, but this is a very fast growing segment. And I think it's for a number of reasons. One is, like we talked about, there are people who like this particular gun, the AR-15, and guns like it, like using it for things that you wouldn't necessarily, or the non-gun owner wouldn't necessarily think that it would be appropriate for. But, in fact, it is used for hunting small game. In fact, it is used for varmint control in rural areas. And it's increasingly used for competitive target shooting. And beyond that, I think what you have is a lot of people who are own guns or are interested in owning a gun who look and want to own the latest thing. They are people who are interested in gadgets and probably are interested in gadgets in other facets of their life, whether it's the car they drive or the computer they use or...
But you don't think of a gun as a gadget. Where does the gadgetry come in?
Well, the gadgetry comes in with the AR-15, and what really makes it unique is it is a modular product. That means, you know, it... there are hundreds, if not thousands, of interchangeable parts and accessories that you can buy for an AR-15 style gun. And they are, in essence, plug and play. That's what a person in the industry told me. That's how he described it. And he didn't want to be quoted using that terminology because we don't think of guns as being playthings. And that's not really what I'm implying, but it is... Well, unlike some of the other weapons we've talked about, such as an old Winchester Model 70, there are a limited number of things you can do to that traditional
style rifle.
What can
you do? What can you do to the? I'm all excited now. I guess you could. I mean, here are the things that I would think of for my old M1 or something like that. I mean, I would get maybe a telescope or something like that to put on it. I might be able to monkey with it a little bit more to make it more automatic. I might be able to do that, but I can't think of, maybe I would saw off the barrel so that, it would be more a pistol. But I'm just trying, what would you do?
Before I say that, let me tell you, kind of how this has happened is that the AR-15 was originally developed in the late 50s. And it's been around for a long time. And the original patents on it have long expired. And as the gun became more popular for civilian use, but also for law enforcement and military use, but as it became more popular, lots of little companies sprung up not only to make AR-15 style guns, but also to make all these accessories that you can put on it. So there was a tremendous amount of product development and a relatively large amount of innovation and technological change that went on with the AR-15 in the last 10 years or so. That hasn't been happening in other parts of the gun industry for the most part. So again, it gets back to, I want the coolest or the newest gun. So some of the accessories that are very popular, definitely a high-powered scope like you mentioned. There are magnifiers that will triple the power of your existing high-power scope. There are high-powered scope that will put and these are very popular, will put a red laser dot on the target you are aiming at. So you can't miss. Then you have things like flashlights that can be attached to the handguard, which, surrounds the barrel and will illuminate your target or illuminate your environs. And these are flashlights usually that will not shatter when you fire the gun, which is nice. There are, all sorts of aftermarket grips and triggers, extra grips for more stability, bipods. And then you also have a number of features and accessories that have been points of contention with people who are interested in gun control or people who are lobbying for more gun control. And these include what's called a collapsible stock, which is, the end of the weapon that, is closest to your body, the butt stock. They make, just hundreds of them that collapse in different ways to fold up and make the gun easier to transport, some say easier to conceal. Certainly more comfortable for people if they're maybe wearing lots of clothing or in law enforcement and military settings wearing bulletproof vest or some kind of body armor. That was a feature that was actually one that fell under the assault weapons ban between 1994 and 2004 that we can talk about some more later. But it was it's one that has gotten very popular ever since that ban expired a few years ago.
You haven't talked me into buying one yet, but I'm beginning to see why I might want one. Absolutely no problem, I guess, with I shouldn't say no problem, because in any issue that has to do with guns, there's a problem. But essentially, people are using this for hunting. What's What's the worry about it? What was the worry that your friend Jim Zumbo had mm-hmm. about this kind of weapon being used or being used for hunting?
Well, this is where I think it gets really interesting. You know, Zumbo, as I said, is very much a traditionalist, not a gun guy, a hunter who thinks of guns as tools. He wrote a blog that the night after he had that conversation on that hunt, on that coyote hunt in southeastern Wyoming.
What was the conversation?
Well, the conversation was about how this type of firearm, this black rifle, had gotten so much more popular among hunters. Jim was very surprised about this, and so he had been asked for the past year or so, he had been writing a blog two or three times a week for his editor, for Outdoor Life magazine, which was his employer. And so he sat down and wrote a blog, and basically it was a short, almost a screed against the use of black rifles in hunting. And his concern was that black rifles had no purpose in hunting and only served to give the hunting community a bad image to the rest of America.
Was he thinking that because this sounds like, because it is a military weapon and that it would be the kind of weapon that you would expect to be used by, the Shia militia in mm-hmm. Iran or something, or maybe terrorists in the United States or people who are trying to hold you up and take your money and mm-hmm. stuff like that.
That seems to be exactly what he was thinking. He suggested calling these not black rifles but terrorist rifles, and he said pointedly that to most of America, this style gun was an assault weapon that was only meant to terrorize people, and that the hunting community should really distance itself from these guns, lest it be perceived as something more dangerous to America than it is.
Well, I'm really holding you back from telling the most interesting part of the story, mm-hmm. but I want one more piece of background information so that I can appreciate the punchline when you give it to me. And that is, you've told us about the black rifles, the AR-15s modified and improved, being used in hunting for legitimate hunting purposes, maybe. Mm-hmm. But now, is it a high crime weapon, or is it just like every other weapon that's used by, a criminal, mm-hmm. or is this also something that the mafia likes?
Well, the answer to your question is we don't know. In the early 1990s, just before the federal assault weapons ban went into place, and the federal assault weapons ban banned the AR-15, at least it banned it in name. It didn't ban all these copies that were subsequently manufactured, but it banned the AR-15 model. And at that time, the supporters of this ban were able to marshal some pretty impressive statistics showing that the AR-15, in fact, was disproportionately being used in violent crime. It was, I believe, third on the list after, the AK-47, which of course was, very famous for being involved, being used in mass shootings and violent crime, and used by drug kingpins and mobsters and that kind of thing. It was right up at the top of the list. And however, since that time, it's very much more difficult to tell what the situation is. First of all, over the last several years, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives has stopped making public data that traces crime to specific guns. That data used to be made public up until about 2001, and it's now a big issue of contention in the gun community and in gun control circles, because gun control advocates would very much like for that data to be released so that they have a better idea, which guns really are used disproportionately in crime.
All right. Well, now you've given us all the background, mm-hmm. and now I'm ready for the punchline, the story yeah. of how your friend Jim Zumbo mm-hmm. Got in trouble. Mm-hmm. We're going to do that right after this short break. Talking to Andrew Park about his article in the New York Times. Mm-hmm. Welcome back to Who's Talking. This is D.G. Martin. Recently, Chapel Hill resident Andrew Park wrote a front page story on the business section of the Sunday New York Times, headline, A Hot Selling Weapon, An Inviting Target. And Andrew Park has told us a little bit about the Black Rifle and how it fits into American life and society. And it's a popular weapon used by hunters and by criminals alike. And the story, though, was not all about this. It was about a person, about an outdoor hunter, or writer, a hunter, Jim Zumbo, and how he got in trouble. And Andrew, just tell us the story of what happened to him and how he maybe messed up talking about this rifle.
Well, as I said, he had been asked by his editors at Outlaw Life magazine to write a blog, and Zumbo now says that they had encouraged him to be controversial. And when he wrote this blog on February 14th, I believe it was, he was definitely controversial in proposing that black rifles be called terrorist rifles and be outright banned from hunting altogether.
Did he say banned?
He said banned. Yeah.
And
that's
a flash word in the NRA community, I guess.
It absolutely is. It was immediately picked up all across, you know, what they call the blogosphere.
I told you I wasn't going to interrupt you, but just to set it up, this, as you explained to us earlier, Jim Zumbo is a very popular outdoor hunting writer, not worshipped by the hunting community and the gun community, but very well respected, a member of the club.
Yes.
And he says the word ban, and what happens?
Yeah, he incites, you know, what people will call now a blog storm. Just all across the internet, there are blogs written and message board messages put up calling him essentially a traitor to the Second Amendment. You're absolutely right that the word banned is absolutely a no-no in gun circles. And Zumbo's years of being a well-known and well-respected hunting writer didn't really do anything, didn't buy him any benefit of the doubt. And to be fair to his critics, his blog post was pretty cut and dried. I mean, when, you know, he wasn't, there was no nuance really there. And so one could argue that it was the response was deserved despite his years and years and years of service to this community.
This was rank heresy. If you think of the National Rifle Association, not all members. I mean, most members are just hunters who use the organization for help with their weapons. But among that core group of people who are Second Amendment absolutist and passionate about it, they couldn't deal with the fact that they couldn't accept in their club any longer anybody who would ban a particular weapon.
That's right. That's right. And one could argue that the loudest voices in this whole controversy were those Second Amendment absolutists, and that they disproportionately were represented or representative. But within a few days, Zumbo had essentially lost his job at Outdoor Life. It took a few more days before his resignation was final, but it was clear that he was going to lose his job. He'd worked there for 29 years and been writing columns for them for 40 years. He had been just totally disowned by the NRA, which came out and said, "We don't support these statements. They branded them as heretical, as you just said." Probably more important for Zumbo's career, he had lost all the sponsors for his, he had a very popular cable show.
All the advertisers.
Show, Remington and Cabela's and all these big names in the industry who I think were fearful of being boycotted or fearful from of a backlash against that would hurt their business.
Well, you know what it reminded me of? I mean, the whole pattern that you described of a person who was one day accepted and then made one miscue and then advertisers left and has lost his program. It was like Ima saying something that was horrible in the eyes of a large community, And it was so horrible in their eyes that they dismissed everything that might have been positive about this before and dug up everything else. I mean, it was Amos all over right. again, except in a different community.
You're absolutely right. And that comparison was not lost on people. And it was even taken a step further when about a week after this controversy began, Zumbo accepted an invitation to go and visit Ted Nugent at Ted's ranch in Texas.
Now, who is Ted Nugent?
Well, Ted Nugent, for, you know, to a lot of residents. People is, you know, a rock star from the 1970s, kind of outrageous guy. He was the Motor City Madman, guy from Detroit. And, you know, if you pull up a video of him on the internet, from the 70s, you'll see him with long frizzy hair and hot pants and no shirt and probably a tail attached to his back. And, you know, he was a rock star, and he still is a rock star, still a musician and very active. I believe he has a new album out right now. But he has perhaps become more prominent as a advocate for the Second Amendment, an advocate for gun rights and hunters' rights. And
he's Charlton Heston for your generation.
He absolutely is. And you know, he is like Heston, but probably more so than Heston, you know, willing to say a lot of things that the people who are working the political and legal angles of gun control can't say. He's an outrageous guy, and many of the things that he told me in our interview, I wouldn't be able to repeat on the radio station. You know, and
why did Zumbo want to go see him?
Well, Nugent has a really devoted following of people who I would contend probably don't follow him because of his music, but because he is such a passionate advocate of the Second Amendment. And he has an internet community. He has, he's at all the major industry events, NRA meetings. He's a board member of the NRA. He is extremely prominent in that community. He was actually the first person to call Zumbo and call him out on this blog post 2 days after it happened. Zumbo had remained on his trip and had not had any idea the controversy and the firestorm that his blog had created. And he's on his way back to his home in Cody, Wyoming, and Ted Nugent calls his house and says, you know, have Jim give me a call. And when Zumbo calls him, Nugent says, you messed up. You messed up, man, big time. And so in that sense, Nugent was really kind of the most prominent representative of the group of people who were castigating Jim Zumbo.
He was at least nice enough to tell him that he'd broken the code and he was exiled, or he was
exactly.
going to be exiled.
He offered to let Zumbo come and, you know, spend a day in rehab at his ranch, you know, which basically...
And did he do that?
And he did. And within a week, he had gone down there. And, you know, Nugent's desire was to educate Zumbo about how ubiquitous these black rifles are among regular...
And did Zumbo get educated? And did he come to a different idea about
He did. And you can argue, you know, one can argue about how sincere it was, but he now says, he apologized a number of times before he had even gone to visit Nugent, but he apologized a number of times, took the blog down immediately, and has since come out very vocally and said, he was wrong, he was ignorant, he didn't realize how many people and who were using these guns.
And so with that confession, has he been accepted back into the gun community?
He has been accepted by a lot of people. There are still a lot of people who don't trust him. He hasn't gotten his job back. He hasn't gotten his sponsors back. He's still in exile, as you say. But Nugent played a big role in helping him rehabilitate his image, at least partially, and put him back in the column of Second Amendment absolutists.
Well, now, what a great story. And it's you can get it. You can get your story online, and probably will be for at least even for non-subscribers for a few days, and it'll probably be up there floating around for a long time. So we can read your story, but I'm also interested in what you learned. When you fiddle around in communities that are not your own, you learn things and you either come to respect them a little bit more? Are you worrying about them a little bit more? How'd you come away about this, about the Ted Nugents of the world and the Jim Zumbos of the world?
Well, you know, first I should say I really approached this. I'm a business journalist at heart, and I approached this as a business story when I read about this controversy originally, and it was covered by other media initially, and I read about it in the In and Out.
Well, let's change the question then. Okay. What is the business angle on this human interest story?
The business angle is that this is, as I said before, the bright spot for the gun industry right now. You have dozens of manufacturers of both guns and accessories who have gone from being very minor, small, niche players to being very big, important players in the industry. And you also have established names like Remington and Smith & Wesson and Sig Arms recognizing that this is a fast-growing market and wanting to jump in.
Well,
so it was an untold business story without a doubt. And, you know, I would say that I came away with a recognition that it was a much bigger community than I understood.
A bigger story than a business story. Mm-hmm. I'm talking to Andrew Park about his article in the front page of the New York Times Sunday business section, and he and I'll be right back. Talking, this is D.G. Martin. My guest is Andrew Park. Andrew is the journalist whose article called Hot Selling Weapon, an Inviting Target, appeared on a recent Sunday front page of the business section in the New York Times. And Andrew, we're celebrating that. We talked a lot about guns, and we talked a lot about people. I'm interested, what did you learn that you weren't, that's not in your article? What are the important things that you learned about guns and about the gun community and the gun regulation?
Well, what was really most interesting to me was the degree to which the whole debate over gun control and the role of guns in American society has just gotten so polarized. You know, the Ted Nugent and people who agree with him, they are on one side, and they are happy to tell you that you're either with them or you're against them. And then on the other side, I think you have a lot of people, a lot of readers of the New York Times who are uncomfortable with the idea of civilians in large numbers owning weapons like this. Even once they understand certain things about them and certain things about the phenomenon of black rifles, I think that a lot of people are still very uncomfortable with the idea that this kind of thing is proliferating. So, and they're so uncomfortable with it that they are on the side of banning them outright. And banning as many different styles of firearms as possible. And that's really seems to be the divide now. The Zumbo affair highlighted a divide that may or may not be there in the gun community, which is between traditionalists, hunters who think, you know, as long as they, you know, nobody bans their Winchester Model 70 or their 22, everything's okay and they're okay with gun control. And people like Ted Nugent, who said if you ban one weapon, then eventually they're going to ban them all. And so that divide, I think, has now been healed. And most of the gun world seems behind the idea that any ban is a bad one.
Did you come to appreciate the attitude that the National Rifle Association members have, which is you just can't give in on one ban because it's kind of like dominoes. If you don't open it for everything, ultimately they'll just take it away from us one gun at a time. Do you understand that?
I understand the argument. I don't know that I've seen evidence that supports that that's what's going to happen or that could happen. I'm no expert on gun control, and this story wasn't really about gun regulation. But like I said, I really see it as a polarized thing where if I am the NRA or if I am on the other side of the issue, it's in my interest to say, well, if you take one gun, you're going to take them all. Or if I let you have a AR-15 at home.
All right. Well, we just got 1 minute left. Yeah. This is a business story. Now, if I really am a selfish person and I want to take advantage of the knowledge that you got, what gun stock should I buy to take advantage of this?
Well, the interesting thing is there aren't very many gun stocks to buy. And among the American makers, there are only two publicly traded companies, Smith & Wesson and Sturm Ruger. Smith & Wesson is a stock that's been on the rise for a couple of years, and it's expected to go higher. So I guess I would say buy Smith & Wesson, but hopefully no one will come back and hold me to that one because I'm not a stock picker.
Well, we really appreciate the insight that you've given us into this story and into the world of hunters and guns. World not familiar for everybody in Chapel Hill. Andrew Park, read his article. It was recently on the front page of the business section of the Sunday New York Times. Thanks for listening. I'll be back same time tomorrow.
Thank you, DJ.